So sure enough, I made an announcement to home. I'm going to do a pizzeria, and I'm going to do a Neapolitan pizzeria. My wife and everybody else thought I was a little nuts, thinking of introducing something that's never been considered in Chicago, the land of deep dish. So everybody said, well, that's nice. But I continued with this dream, and sure enough, here we are talking today, 14 years later.
Welcome to the Pizza Therapy Podcast, a show about eating pizza, making pizza, loving pizza, where we talk about pizza. We have pizza conversations with the famous, the notorious, as well as unknown pizza lovers. Stay tuned. Hi, my name is Albert Grande, and this is episode 2 of the Pizza Therapy Podcast. This episode is sponsored by the Pizza Therapy Pizza Kit. You can discover all the tools and resources for pizza making at pizzatherapy.com/kit or at the home of this podcast, of pizzapodcast.com/kit. These websites contain affiliate links, and I will be compensated if you make a purchase after clicking on these links. In this episode, I speak with Jonathan Goldsmith, master pizza maker at Spaccanopoli in Chicago. Jonathan explains his path to pizza and why he decided to pursue his goal of opening an authentic Neapolitan pizzeria in the Mecca of Chicago deep dish. Jonathan believes he's part of a guild of pizza makers, as pizza making is always changing and he just wants to make pizza better. I'll include all links and references to this podcast in the show notes, as well as a pizzapodcast.com and at Pizza Therapy. This is Albert Grande, and I have Jonathan Goldsmith of Spaccanopoli, one of the premier pizzerias in the country, on the line with me. He considers himself a pizza guy, but he really is a pizza master. How are you doing today, Jonathan?
I'm good. How are you, Albert?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm glad you're taking time to talk to me. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure.
Jonathan, we've talked a bunch of times in the past, and what I want to open up with is, can you tell me a little bit about how your pizza journey started?
All right. I'll try to be brief. I would say it evolved out of our many years living in Italy in the late 80s, early 90s, when my wife was painting and I was a house husband in Florence. That really began the process with our relationship with Italy, our love of Italy, our attachment to Italy, and trying to incorporate Italy into our day-to-day lives.
And you certainly have done that. And as a result of that, you started hooking up with some of the pizza masters in Italy. How did that happen?
My first connection to the Maestri of Napoli was through my years or summer months in the Gargano in Puglia, where I was a banino, basically a bath boy, setting up umbrellas and the lounge chairs, the lettini, etc., on the beach, and was very familiar, friendly with a number of people, families from all over Italy, who had returned to this small fishing village where their bisnonni, their grandparents, great-grandparents had their homes. Sure enough, when somebody by chance had suggested that I consider a pizzeria as a profession, I began to talk to some of the friends I had in this small fishing village. And there were many said, if you're interested in pizza, they said pizza is a good thing. You know, it's flour, water, salt, and yeast, and you'll make a lot of money. And if you're interested and you want to study, go west, young man, because we were on the Adriatic coast, go west to Naples. Sure enough, one of the families also suggested that if I was serious about this, that I should take a look at one particular program teaching pizza in Naples, and that was with Enzo Cocha of Pizza Consulting. His fellow teacher in the program was the fornaio, the one working the pizzas in the oven of a pizzeria in Posillipo called Prunetto. And Prunetto was their go-to pizzeria when at home. So sure enough, I made my way to Naples, introduced myself to Enzo, and maybe 3 months later, this was in 2003, in November, I began my study with Enzo in Naples. And from there, I truly was on the streets of Naples, always asking questions and looking for other great pizza makers so I could learn from them as well.
Enzo is actually your mentor? who has taught you much about pizza. Is that correct?
I would say Enzo offered to me the fundamentals. He pretty much set in motion what I needed to learn over a lifetime. Anybody who thinks that they can go to Naples for 3 weeks, 3 months, and become a pizza maker, and they can do everything in those 3 weeks or 3 months, cover them for a life's worth of work, is just not going to happen. I see it as a guild, and I'm in the beginning stages of it, and you're constantly learning. So whenever time has passed and I continue to travel to Naples in the search of research, whether it's for pizza, wine, cheese, fagioli, etc., I'm constantly reaching out to the new colleagues, old colleagues, to see if I can spend time with them. It takes a lifetime to really learn this mestiere. So I think from Enzo, in those 3 weeks, I learned from him what I would need to learn over a lifetime. So it's going from Enzo to Antonio Starita to my good friends at Di Matteo, Da Michele, to Franco Pepe and Cayazzo, and a good friend in the Cilento and Palinuro Medfarin Club with Francuccio. And I think most recently, really taking a good deal from dear friend and very well-respected colleague Attilio Baghetti of Tiglio in Pina Seca in Naples. It's a lifetime process. It's not something that one takes in 3 weeks or 3 months.
Pizza is very simple. Simple, four simple ingredients: flour, water, salt, and yeast. And
that is for the dough.
That is for the dough. Yes. Okay, just for the dough. But you go back to Italy every year?
This last year, in 2016, I probably was there five times. I would say at least twice a year, sometimes six times a year that I'm back.
It's a learning process. It's a process, right? You keep learning, becoming better, sharing your knowledge.
Yes. It's, as I mentioned before, I think of myself as being part of a guild, the Pizza Guild. As I mentioned, that our early years were in Florence, city of the Rinascimento, the Renaissance. And the culture 300-500 years ago with guilds, and maybe depending on where your economic strata would determine what guild you went into, whether it was to become a butcher, to work with silk, to be a banker. You would determine sort of what guild you went into. And in the beginning, you may go and say if you were in a painting studio with Gilberte, for example, or Leonardo, nice studios to be in, that maybe in the beginning as a 10-year-old or 12-year-old, all you're doing is sweeping the floors, the slop pot, maybe going and getting the bread and for whatever salumi or cheese may be for a panino, to a point where you're actually putting cartoons on the wall, mixing pigments, etc. It's a lifelong process. If I look at the pizzas that we were producing in our first year compared to what we're doing right now, we truly have evolved over time.
That's incredible. How did Spaccanopoli start? After you went to Italy, you learned the craft, and then you came back and you started Spaccanopoli. How was that?
Well, after the recommendation or the suggestion that I consider the pizzeria was made that summer, after speaking to one of my friends on the beach who had said, "Go west, young man," when we returned from Rodi Garganico back to the States, I pretty much presented to Ginny that I needed to take a passeggiata, a walk, and that was going to be in Naples. So I, within a month of being home, I purchased a ticket and went to Naples to take a walk around. We had been there as tourists years ago from Florence, but this was with a different intent. And sure enough, in the 4 days that I was on the streets of Naples, visited Da Michele, Di Matteo, Sorbillo, etc., and really saw the movement on the street. There's an incredible culture to pizza, as there is for egg rolls, ices, and all sorts of wonderful things that people enjoy. And you'd see, on the street, people so excited, waiting in queue to get into their favorite pizzeria. And there's a certain anima, life force in itself, that was so exciting to see and to appreciate. And so sure enough, I came home feeling very excited that this is going to be my next endeavor. And so sure enough, I made an announcement to home. I'm going to do a pizzeria, and I'm going to do a Neapolitan pizzeria. My wife and everybody else thought I was a little nuts thinking of introducing something that's never been considered in Chicago, the land of deep dish. So everybody said, well, that's nice. But I continued with this dream. And sure enough, here we are talking today, 14 years later.
Tell me a little bit about Spokanopoly and what you're doing with pizza right now, Jonathan.
Trying to make it better. I strongly believe in the sense of the guild and that it's a lifelong practice. And luckily, with the relationship I have with Molino Caputo, I'm able to constantly send out questions to the mill, in particular with Mauro Caputo, the son of Eugenio, who is the brother of Carmine. The two of them are the third generation of Caputo. Carmine pretty much, I would say, runs the show, and Eugenio is the master miller, but his son Carlo is truly, I'm not sure if he's on the same level, whether he's beyond him, but luckily with Mauro being fluent in English, I'm able to send to him technical questions, sempre c'è una domanda, there's always a question, so he can interpret from my knowledge what I'm looking for and meditate on it and then give me an answer. So, for example, we try to do as little refrigerated dough as possible, though we still do it. And many of the pizzerias that they don't do in Naples, if there's leftover dough, you often will see it, you know, in their fridges and maybe pulled out at some point in the day to make use of instead of losing the dough. I remember Franco Pepe's brother, I don't remember his name, when I was first working with Franco and Caiazzo, his brother talked about something that I've always felt very dear to, of their father, who they lovingly embraced, that dough was never to be thrown out. It was always to be used in some way. So, for example, the pagnotte, the leftover dough, the dough balls that are no longer in shape to be used for pizza, we can always put that away in the fridge and then use it for baguettes even 10 days later. It will have some of that wonderful acidity that I enjoy for the baguettes, but not for our dough, which truly doesn't fit. Sourdough is truly not in the profile of Neapolitan pizza. So anyway, one of the rounds of dough we may do will be a 24 to 30-hour cycle where we'll mix in the morning, let it rest for 4 hours, and I'll ball it after 4 hours, let it rest for 6 to 8 hours, and then introduce it into our wine room, which is 60, 62 degrees. And I had written to Mauro one time saying, we've lowered the temperature of our wine room because of the humidity and some of the boxes that were not maintaining their integrity. Do we have an issue with thermal shock? And Mauro, after understanding after a bit my English or my Italian, was able to say, no, it's not that cold that you're creating a thermal shock, but best instead of letting it sit out for 2 hours after rolling it, let it sit for at least 6 to 8 hours at the room temperature, then introducing it to the room so you give the dough enough time to do its mojo, whatever that means. I'm on the riding experience of Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, so I don't understand the science behind it, the physics and the chemistry, but I do know who to call. So here we are, you know, 12 years later, thinking we really have an understanding of the dough, but there's always something new that one could ask. So I think one of the most important things is that we're still at the beginning. We're still trying to figure out what works. The dough is alive. It's constantly changing. And as we're adapting, the dough adapts, and we need to really have an understanding instead of just doing it by chance. So that's something that's really not different, always trying to make it better. One of the things very exciting is there are two new flour products are, for me, new from the Milano Caputo. One is the Tipo Uno, which is a product very much loved by Carmine Caputo, because he makes him think of the pasta, the dough as it was maybe 50 years ago or longer, whereas for him as a child, it's two steps less refined than the double zero. So we're doing a mix that's incorporating probably about 20%. Dear Roberto Camporuscio, who I think is one of the greatest in America alongside Tony Gemmiani and Chris Bianco, he now has actually switched over to using Tipo Uno 100% versus doing a blend. He really loves it as well. And the other product from the Caputo that I've introduced here, which has been well received, is the Quarta Cereale, which is a mix of grains and seeds for a multigrain. And Antimo Caputo asked me to play with it last year at the restaurant show in Chicago. And it's this really lovely dough, and I refer to a series called Benessere Well-Being, with Antimo's strong recommendation that this wasn't a pizza or a dough to be used with tomato. We can play with it to do things as fun as pie that we have this weekend with fior di latte, with kale, beet, feta cheese, walnuts, and then a beautiful drizzle of a very fine balsamic, another one that came from the Manuela, the daughter of Lino, Cutolo of Ciao Tomato. She's based in Rome, and there's a salad that they have with avocado, shrimp, and una crema, a cream that's made from Greek yogurt and dill. So they will serve the shrimp with the dill and the yogurt in the half of an avocado. We played with it at the show and introduced an avocado cream with the fior di latte and the Greek yogurt. So that's something very exciting to introduce, this new dough, and with it another line of pizza, incorporating some of the wonderful toppings that I guess would be typical maybe of chic, pizza chic that we have today. We continue to fine-tune the wine list, which is all Campania, and I'm trying to fine-tune how I am as an owner in terms of how we run the business, how I can better serve our employees. Many of them have been with us for 10, 12 years right now, and how we can better serve our community that's definitely been supportive to us. So that's, I think, maybe something new for us, but actually very old, but still keeping sort of those ideas very fresh for us as guiding factors in how we run our day to day.
Some of the pizzas that you mentioned sound very exciting. Can you go into it a little bit more, some of the new pizzas that you're introducing into Spaconopoli?
I can't in some ways, but what I can talk more about is where the inspiration comes from, more so. When people ask us what I would recommend, I always go into a spiel about Don Michele, that this wonderful pizzeria, probably the most famous of Neapolitan pizzerias around the world, that from 1870 or however long they've been in existence, have only gone with two pies, a marinara and a margherita, though I did see a post today about that. Well, they also have the Cosacca, which is this wonderful pie, basically with tomato and pecorino. And I'm very excited that we have a very special pecorino called Conciato Romano, which is a cheese produced by our dear friends at the Agriturismo Le Campestre in Casta de Sasso, outside of Caiazzo, where Franco Pepe is. I've known them for years. And it's a wonderful pie with grating this cheese. And what's exciting about it, it's considered the oldest cheese produced today in Western Europe. It's a cheese that was made by the Romans 2,000 years ago. Don Michele, marinara, margherita, people such as yourself, true pizza nuts, as I am, more often than not, we're interested in the dough, the quality of the oil, the tomato, and the cheese. And then everything else is just additional music. So Don Michele, for over 100 years, have been able to work with just basically two pies. So we have a standard menu of maybe 12 or 16 particular pies that are reflective of Naples, and then traditional pies that you would see in other parts of Italy as well, whether it's quattro formaggi, sei formaggi, capricciosa, etc. But over the years, we have created a master list, or I have created a master list of maybe 300 pizzas. And sometimes it's repetition of a theme, but every once in a while, one that I find either on Facebook or when I'm looking at a pizza menu in travel, or if somebody makes a recommendation, or find even a pasta combination, we have incorporated those pizza into our specials board and introduce. So I'm very excited to take from other great pizza makers some of the special pies that they have put on the board, and then I like to offer here. And I don't really think that I am stealing somebody's pizza, because most likely on the board you'll see the name, for example, a pizza named La Buzanca, for example, Maria Buzanca, a great pizza maker, trained by Padawan, a great pizza maker from the north. It's a different style with almost a focaccia, but she has wonderful combinations similar to Franco Pepe or Ciro Oliva. And so, sure enough, I was excited to be in her presence. So last year I went for 2 days to see her and just to be witness to what she does. And I've introduced a pie that I had from her her location in L'Aquila, really simple. There's wonderful Padawan focaccia, and then it's with fior di latte. Then we change the combination. There's prosciutto cotto, then some burrata, and then a feta, or a slice of black truffle on top of the drizzle of oil. And so on the board, you have this pie, la buzanca. It's not my pie. It's hers. But I love to share it. I love to celebrate it. So for me, when it's like, what are new pizzas? It's more, what are the new pizzas of some of the other fellow pizza makers that I've experienced? And then I like to put forth. My sense of self is great enough that I don't need to say it's my pie. And I'm very comfortable saying, here's a wonderful pie that a colleague or somebody I've come across that they do, and I would like to share it here. Another one, for example, I don't remember his last name, but I call it Gianfranco. He is a pizza maker somewhere along the Amalfi Coast. And that's one that goes really well with this quarticeriale pasta, where it's a crema, a cream of cauliflower, potato, and leek. So we put that on the pie, then a fior di latte, and then it has a really nice blanched shrimp, and then it has some fresh mint to it. It's a wonderful summer pie. And it has the name Gianfranco because he's the one who created it. So I guess for me, what are the new pies? It's more the inspiration that I find from some of the other pizza makers that have come into my awareness.
Wonderful. But just fantastic information, Jonathan. I want people to come and see what you do. And that's why I want to talk about Spaconopoli. What is your vision of Spaconopoli? As you said, you've changed your pizza from the time you started till the time now. Where are you going with Spaconopoli?
Well, again, as I said, to continue to be on top of the dough, to make sure that it's well produced, it's well managed. The people refer to me as a chef, and I always correct them, and I say I'm a dough boy, I'm a pizza guy, I'm not a chef. I read recipes, and some of them I can execute well, and I look for people who can help me with that execution. What's really important for me right now is my pizzaioli, the guys at the pizza bank, that they're in tune with the dough as much as I am in terms of the management of the dough. Because as Roberto will, one of the things that he does so wonderfully when he teaches, he'll put on the table in front of the students maybe a piece of fish, an apple, I'm not sure if he'll put something like a baseball or a soccer ball, and then there's a dough ball. And he says, how is this dough ball different than the others? And everybody's sort of scratching their head, you know, is it the size, is it the form, is it the color? And he'll say, it's alive. The dough ball is still alive. It's still moving. At some point, it dies. You know, if you think of Chris Bianco, he'll say pizza's always dying, that the quality level of the dough, similar to mozzarella, is decreasing in its various values over time. That's why we don't even take to-go orders over the phone. Somebody has to come into the pizzeria, place an order, and wait for it to go. I don't have the capacity to see a pizza come out of the oven, put in a box, and then have it sit for 10 or 15 minutes waiting for somebody to come in and pick it up. Because I know that the quality of it is not the same as it was 15 minutes before. So one of the things that's really important in the operation of this pizzeria, or I think of any pizzeria, is really being in touch with where the dough is. So it's like that saying, it's 10 o'clock, do you know where your children are? And especially in our location, where I may have four different mixes going at the various times during the week, and you constantly need to be looking at them and seeing which one you stage first. And if you need to block something, put in the fridge to save it for the next day, then that's what has to be done. Is it moved from the wine room that's at 62 degrees to another place where it has to go for 6 hours at 68 degrees, because the dough has to be temperatura ambiente. It really should be room temperature. And that's not something, if you have a dough that's in the fridge for 24 hours, do you think you're going to work with that dough with it being out of the fridge for 1 hour? There's no way. I mean, you can, but it's not going to be the same quality as a dough that's so gentle and so giving that you can almost blow on it and it gently extends. Similar to pastry, the less you touch it, the less you work it, the more delicate it can be. So one of the things that's really important for me right now is to try to take a step back a little bit and see whether the guys at the pizza bank are really on top of where the dough is and being able to use it at its best moment to manage. So that's something maybe what I'm trying to do right now. They have it down, how to extend a pie, how to top it. And there are a few of our crew who are really, I think, quite exceptional at being the fornaio, the one working the forno, working the pizza in the oven, which is apart than doing dishes, that the hardest job in the restaurant is really understanding in the oven its temperatures and cooking it. So I think our managing the dough, or my sharing that, the importance of that with my staff, probably something that's really important to me right now.
Jonathan, how about some tips for the home pizza maker?
Well, if you could refresh your memory and look at that wonderful video we did with Antonio Starita a couple years back. I remember from Antonio talking about actually putting a little bit more yeast in the dough to get it started, which I don't necessarily agree with, that one can make dough the day before. And as I said, with management, really learning where best to stage the dough so it can grow without rush and be ready for showtime. Probably one of the most important things is, unless you have either one of the new ovens coming out that can get to that high temperature, you know, that somebody buys and puts in their backyard, or if you're working more with a conventional oven, is to remember that it will be near impossible to do la pizza palata Neapolitan that really calls for an oven for, you know, 850 degrees, 900 degree cook time. That standard ovens at home, you're at 500 and 550, that you'll be doing a pie closer, I think, to a Roman style, which is wonderful. It's a different pie, but you can still do the beautiful toppings, etc. But most likely, you're not going to get that same delicate puff that you would have when you're taking that dough, when you're putting it into the oven, that you would with a high temperature oven such as Neapolitan. One of the first learning experiences I had with realizing that the cook time with at home was going to be 3 to 4 minutes, that you definitely, one, may first cook your dough for a little bit and then put your toppings on for the second part of the cooking time so things don't burn. I do remember trying to do an occhio di bue, a bullseye pizza, an egg on the pizza. And after 3 minutes, the egg yolk starts to boil and then eventually explodes. So if you're doing an egg at home, definitely put it in the last minute of the cook time and then you'll be okay. So what's important is that your basic formula has not changed. Other than a couple things, one thing significant, finally I listened to John Arena, and he said you have to weigh your water. The basic recipe formula is 1 liter of water. This is how I learned from Enzo Cocha. 1 liter of water, 1.7 kilos of flour, 50 grams of salt, and 2.5 grams of yeast. We use fresh bakers. And that was for more or less an 8-hour rise. But of course, depending on your environment, that could be 6 hours, it could be 10 hours. What we've done, the first change, or a recent, was to change the nomenclature, that's the right word, to, instead of liters, we talk of kilos of water. But I still use the word liter, but they know I mean kilos. So one is we're weighing out the water. The two variables that will change will be the amount of yeast and the amount of flour. We have some changes with that. So in the winter time where the air is drier, especially in Chicago, we're reducing from 1.7 to maybe 1.6 kilos of flour. And then depending if we're doing a 24-hour rise, or whether it's a 12-hour rise, whether we're doing something overnight that never goes into the wine room, or if it's something that's 24 hours going to the wine room, then we adjust the yeast. So we've gone, for example, from the original one bag, 25 kilos of flour, and 15 liters of water. It's actually probably about 15.25, but the water actually levels a little bit higher when you weigh it. So the water is constant and the salt would be constant. So for one bag would be 750 grams. But instead of an 8-hour rise would be 37.5 grams of yeast, 2.5 per kilo of water. We could do as little as 6 grams of yeast or 4 grams of yeast. So that's like almost 1/10 the amount. And that's in the service of this long rise. And the Italians, who I think of as having a sixth sense, that they really have an understanding of digestibility beyond what I have, and their palate is completely different. I always love it when, I'm not going to pronounce it properly, a true Italian comes in. I mean, somebody who's not Italian-American, but somebody who's coming in from Milan or especially from Naples, and they try the pizza, and they would say how digestible the dough is. It's all about digestion. And one of the principal axioms probably the most important one I took from Enzo was meno lievito più leggero. The less yeast, the more delicate is the dough. And with that, for the idea that I would prefer to say today there's no pizza if it's somehow the yeast was no good or I wasn't focused and the dough wasn't good, I would rather say we have no dough and say come back tomorrow, we try to figure out, we make panino with our bread, because I would choose not to have dough for service than to take massive amounts of yeast to have an emergency dough that's ready in 2 hours or 4 hours. Because what happens is that if you have a dough, that looks like it's ready to use in 2 hours because you put the massive amount of yeast in it, what's happened is somebody will eat that pie and then it will continue to grow in their stomach for hours and hours and hours because of the yeast that's still active versus the life force. And again, I don't know the science of it. A dough that has very little yeast that you're allowing to work, you know, for 24 hours, that growing part is already done. That business is over. So when they eat it, they just have the flavor profile and all the other wonderful nuances of the pie. So that's something that's very, very significant. You adjust the flour and you may adjust the yeast. And the most important thing is that if you're doing the dough at home or if you're doing it at, you know, in your pizzeria, that you know the environments where dough for different periods of time can hold better. So with Enzo, then the last thing with this that I think is the most significant, and I'll talk about our 24-hour cycle, that with Enzo, you did your mix, you let it rest on the table for an hour, and then you cut it, and then it's ready for show in 8 hours. When we do our 24-hour dough process, we mix, we let it rest on the table for 4 hours. Then we cut it. If we're putting it in that wine room, segundo, according to Mauro, best that we leave it in the room temperature environment for at least 8 hours so it can continue to do its thing. Then we slow it down just a touch, but not too much. There's no shock. And then we bring it out hours beforehand to work the dough. So that's a big change from before, from the 1 hour rest.
Right. Okay, great. Great.
One of the things that is really quite special, and I forgot who commented on last year at the NRA show in Chicago, was you have people like Michele D'Amelio, and you have Giulio Adriani, and then you have Berto, and then you have John Arena, and you have Vince Rotolo, then you have a little guy like me, who was then playing with the Quarticelliale last year, and that each of us at the Orlando Food Caputo, that you had so many different pizza makers there offering so many different styles of pizza. And I think that's really something that's really remarkable. And then I think when you see us in action, that you really can get the feel that we are a guild. And what's nice is that the new guys, such as myself, are well embraced by the old guys, such as John Arena and Roberto Capaduccio, though I think I'm older than Roberto, but in terms of he's been making pizzas for 30 years plus, and I've just begun. But so to see the camaraderie that we have, but to really see all the different styles, that it's truly a celebration. It really isn't work. But we're tired at the end of the day, but it's definitely just, you know, pure love. I think.
Yes, absolutely. Jonathan, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me. What I'm going to do at the end is I'll put all the links to all the videos I've done. I've done a couple of interviews with you, and I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me. Tell people how people can find Spaconopoli in Chicago.
Just ask anybody in the street, and they'll point you in the direction of the pizzeria. That's how you find it. We're in an area called Ravenswood. So we're not far from downtown. A number of the public transportation lines run close to us. We're at 1769 West Sunnyside. The building stands out. You'll find us. Just look for somebody smiling on the street, and then you'll find us.
Spaconopoli Pizzeria?
It's Spaconopoli Pizzeria, and it's Spaconopoli Pizzeria with two Z's, PIZZERIA.com in Chicago.
Okay. Jonathan, enjoy your day off. Thank you.
Thanks,
again.
Albert.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Ciao.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Ciao. Bye-bye. Thank you again, Jonathan, for sharing your wonderful pizza tale. For this episode, I want to recognize Spaconopoli Pizzeria in Chicago. Come for the food, stay for the story. You can find Spaconopoli Pizzeria at 1769 West Sunnyside Avenue in Chicago. Their phone number, 773-878-2420. Thanks again for listening to the Pizza Therapy Podcast and supporting our sponsor. If you want to make pizza, check out the Pizza Therapy Pizza Kit at kit.com/pizzatherapy or pizzatherapy.com/kit or at our podcast home, apizzapodcast.com, where you can find all the episodes and the show note. I'll include all links and the show notes at apizzapodcast.com, spelled apizzapodcast.com. Until next time, pizza on earth, goodwill to all.